Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Mario Ritter, Anna Mateo, and Phil Dierking. Later, Kelly Jean Kelly will present America's Presidents. But first, here is Mario Ritter.
The United States is working with Latin American countries to investigate possible corruption by Venezuelan officials. The Associated Press says the two sides held 2 days of talks on the issue in June at a hotel in Panama. Several other meetings are reported to have taken place since April. The discussions are part of an effort by the administration of U.S. President Donald Trump to pressure Venezuela's political leadership. Venezuela is rich in oil and a member of OPEC, the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries. But it faces major economic problems, including high inflation, debt, and a lack of basic goods. Many Venezuelans have fled to neighboring countries, causing a humanitarian crisis. The socialist policies of President Nicolas Maduro are widely blamed for his country's problems. The Trump administration is sharing information about Venezuela with officials from Mexico, Panama, and Colombia. They are looking at business ties to the Venezuelan government. They believe that some of the companies are taking money from food import programs. Since January 2017, the U.S. Treasury Department has taken steps to punish a number of Venezuelan officials. They have faced sanctions over reported corruption, human rights abuses, and trafficking in illegal drugs. Several of the people who took part in the Panama meeting spoke to the Associated Press. They asked that their names not be made public because the talks were private. At the meeting, financial investigators looked at the business dealings of Venezuelan companies said to be under the government's control. They also wanted to study the dealings of businessmen tied to the government. Last year, Trump suggested to aides and Latin American leaders that Maduro should be removed from office by force. The administration has more recently sought to increase pressure on Venezuela's government with the help of allies in the area. Marshall Billingsley is the Treasury Department's Assistant Secretary for Terrorist Financing. He spoke to reporters at the June meeting. He said the administration chose to pay close attention to Venezuela's food program. The AP reported in 2016 that top government officials were diverting money from food import deals. Since that time, reports of hunger in Venezuela have spread. Maduro's government has moved to give out containers of staple foods such as cooking oil, flour, rice, and canned goods. The containers are said to be provided by local committees for supply and production. They are known as CLAP boxes from their Spanish acronym. The CLAP boxes, however, have become a highly disputed issue. Maduro says the food is a way to fight what he calls the economic war carried out against him by the U.S. government and its allies. His critics say the food supplies are a form of social control in which food is given only to Maduro's supporters. Millions of Venezuelans now depend on the CLAP boxes. They are especially important because of Venezuela's high inflation. A local research company notes that more than 60% of Venezuelan homes said they received CLAP boxes in the past 3 months. Reports of corruption linked to the way food is given out have led to increased attention. This goes beyond just corruption, Billingsley said. This is literally looting the one social safety net program left in Venezuela. Investigators have turned their attention to a Colombian businessman, Alex Saab, from Barranquilla. Saab gained attention a few years ago by signing an agreement to build social housing in Venezuela. At the time, he appeared with then-President Hugo Chavez, Maduro, and then-Colombian President Juan Manuel Santos. Investigators say Saab entered the food business through a Hong Kong-based company called Group Grand Limited. But investigators say the group appears to be linked to Saab's building company back in Colombia. Group Grand has received a contract to provide at least 11.5 million CLAP boxes. The AP says it has received information that Group Grand charged Venezuela's food ministry $41 million for powdered milk in September of 2017. The price was more than 100% higher than the market price at the time, the AP report said. I'm Mario Ritter.
Around the world, one in six deaths is from cancer. And a new study notes an increase in cancer rates around the world. This study comes from the International Agency for Research on Cancer, an agency of the World Health Organization. It attempts to estimate the number of cancer cases and cancer death rates in 185 countries. The study estimates that 18 million new cancer cases will be reported in 2018.
It adds that about 9.6 million people are expected to die of cancer this year. The study found that around the world, 1 in 5 men and 1 in 6 women develop cancer during their lifetime. It also found that more men than women die of cancer. The study estimates that nearly half of the new cancer cases and more than half of cancer deaths this year will take place in Asia. This is partly because nearly 60% of the world's population lives on that continent. The new study looked at 36 kinds of cancer. The most common were lung, breast, colorectal, prostate, skin cancer, and stomach. Lung cancer is one of the leading causes of death worldwide. The study estimates that nearly 1.8 million people will die of lung cancer this year. The study also attempted to show where in the world cancer rates are rising the most. Freddie Bray is with the International Agency for Research on Cancer. He says that by the year 2040, the number of new cancer cases is expected to rise to 29.3 million worldwide. He said this will cause financial hardship in areas lacking the money needed to fight cancer.
The biggest increases in the cancer burden, a doubling of the cancer burden to 2040, is going to occur in countries at the lowest levels of socioeconomic development. So many in sub-Saharan Africa, some in South America, some in Southern Asia. But they're the countries faced with this increasing cancer burden, are presently ill-equipped to deal with the pending increase.
The WHO reports that between 30 to 50% of cancers can be prevented by avoiding certain risk factors. Some factors may increase a person's chance of getting cancer. Examples are tobacco use, including smoking cigarettes and smokeless tobacco, being overweight, having an unhealthy diet, not eating enough fruit and vegetables, lack of physical exercise, alcohol use, air pollution, burning solid fuels indoors. Etienne Krug is the director of the WHO's Department of Noncommunicable Diseases. To protect yourself, he suggests several steps. He says cutting down on tobacco and alcohol use may reduce your chance of getting cancer. He also suggests that by exercising more and eating better, you may help to protect yourself against cancer. For some cancers, he says that getting vaccinated may also help. Vaccines can help to strengthen the body's natural defenses against some cancers, like cervical and liver cancers.
And we also could do a lot by increasing immunization against some cancers like cervical cancer and liver cancers, for example. But for those who have cancer, cancer should not be a death sentence anymore.
Krug suggests that other steps can help to increase cancer survival rates. They include strengthening health services, improving early diagnosis, and providing access to proper treatment. He adds that special care should be given to patients with inoperable cancer to help ease their suffering. For more information, visit the website of the Global Cancer Observatory, which is part of the International Agency for Research on Cancer. It has created a detailed webpage called Cancer Today, presenting these findings in easy-to-read infographics. I'm Anna Mateo.
For her 35th birthday, Binoush Babzani decided to hold a party. She used her birthday to ask friends to donate money to a cause she cares about, helping people who need bone marrow transplants. Babzani herself received bone marrow from her brother in a transplant operation. "It's not that my body was making cancerous cells. It was that my body was making no cells," she said. Turning to social media, Babzani published a picture of herself on Facebook's website. The photograph showed her as a hospital patient. Using a new program on Facebook, she asked her friends to help raise $350. It has always been easy for Facebook users to send birthday messages to friends online. Now, people are using the social networking site to turn birthday messages into donations for a favorite cause, such as a charitable group. A year ago, the American company launched a new feature that has helped charities in the United States and around the world. In its first year, Facebook's birthday fundraiser feature raised more than $300 million for groups helping those in need. This success has caused some charities to rethink their methods for raising money. However, the success of the Facebook birthday feature comes at a troubling time for the company. Social media users have begun to question how internet services connecting friends and family have also become tools for some to spread hate or influence foreign elections. Recently, a U.S. Senate committee met with Sheryl Sandberg, Facebook's chief operating officer, and Jack Dorsey, who heads Twitter. Sandberg spoke about steps Facebook has taken to identify and remove messages that violate the company's terms of service. "We were too slow to spot this and too slow to act. That is on us," she told lawmakers. However, the birthday fundraiser feature shows the power of using social media for good, says Facebook spokeswoman Roya Winner. "It gives people who are celebrating a birthday a chance to turn that day into something that's bigger than themselves," she said. Some of the charities receiving the largest donations are St. Jude Children's Research Hospital, the Alzheimer's Association, and the American Cancer Society. In the case of Binoush Babzani, she raised more than $1,700 in donations to help pay for bone marrow transplants. 2 weeks before his 65th birthday, Stan Jensen received a message from Facebook asking if he wanted to use his birthday to ask people to donate to a cause. Jensen, a retired sales worker, decided that he did. He turned to 1,400 Facebook friends to help raise money for the Marine Mammal Center in Northern California, where he cares for injured sea lions. He works as a volunteer there once a week. Jensen raised $2,300. He said that much money was more than he could have dreamed for, and he let his friends know they made a difference. "You've bought a ton of fish," he told them. "You are feeding all the animals we have on site for several days." His birthday is coming up again, and the sea lions are always hungry. He's perfecting his pitch. "I know I'm special to you, but I'd like just the cost of a Starbucks coffee. Just $5, please. I'm Phil Dierking."
VOA Learning English presents America's Presidents. Today we are talking about John Quincy Adams. Does his name sound familiar? John Quincy Adams, the sixth president, was the son of John Adams, the second president. Like his father, Quincy Adams had a sharp mind and a difficult personality. personality. And, like his father, Quincy Adams served only one 4-year term as president. But Quincy Adams went on to have many successful years working in a different job. He is the only former president, so far, to serve in the House of Representatives. The parents of John Quincy Adams, John and Abigail, were strong patriots. Theirs was one of the founding families of the United States. Abigail Adams especially raised her son to serve his country. She expected him to become president. She told him that, with his good education and training, if he did not serve in a high public office, it would be his own fault. Quincy Adams did not disappoint his mother. As a child, he learned to speak at least 4 languages and read Greek and Latin. He also studied Shakespeare's plays. At age 10, he traveled with his father to Europe. As a young man, he worked alongside John Adams in American diplomatic offices in Paris, Amsterdam, and St. Petersburg. Finally, Quincy Adams returned to his home in Boston in time to graduate from Harvard. He was working as a lawyer by the age of 23. Stories confirm that Quincy Adams was a brilliant boy and young man, but he rarely compromised his ideas. His inability to work with other lawmakers and to consider public opinion were partly to blame for his difficult presidency. Quincy Adams may have been a poor politician, but he was an excellent diplomat. In the early part of his career, he served as the American ambassador to the Netherlands, Germany, Russia, and Britain. He helped lead the negotiations that ended the War of 1812, and he served for 8 years as Secretary of State under James Monroe. Some of that president's accomplishments owe a lot to Quincy Adams. He helped negotiate the purchase of Florida from Spain, and he was one of the people responsible for the Monroe Doctrine. It warned Europe not to interfere in the Western Hemisphere. But Quincy Adams could be impatient, especially with lawmakers. Many of them, he believed, did not care much about the country and wanted to help only themselves. Quincy Adams also avoided political battles. As Secretary of State, he appointed people whom he thought were capable, even if they did not support his political party. Similarly, when he became president, he tried to bring political opponents, along with representatives of different parts of the country, together in his cabinet. His opponents, however, refused to serve, and although his cabinet included Southerners, he did not really have the support of the South. Yet Quincy Adams talked about unity in his presidential inaugural speech. Adams said, "The Constitution and the representative democracy of the United States had proved a success. The nation was free and strong and stretched across the continent, from the Atlantic Ocean to the Pacific. He noted that political divisions had eased. So now, he said, it was time for the people to settle their differences and make a truly national government. In his first message to Congress, President Adams described his ideas. The chief purpose of the government, he said, was to improve the lives of the people it governed. To do this, he offered a national program of building roads and canals. He also proposed a national university and a national scientific center. Adams said Congress should not be limited to making laws only to improve the nation's economic life. He said it should make laws to improve the arts and sciences, too. But many people of the West and South did not believe that the Constitution gave the federal government the power to do all these things. They believed these powers belonged to the states. Their representatives in Congress rejected the president's proposals. In addition, a new opposition party was trying to weaken support for Quincy Adams. They supported a general from Tennessee named Andrew Jackson. Historian Harlow Giles Unger says, John Quincy Adams was never able to meet the high expectations many people had for him. His presidency was a complete failure, Unger told VOA. He was able to accomplish nothing. Quincy Adams lost the presidential election of 1828 in a landslide. He refused to attend the inauguration of Andrew Jackson. He returned to his home in Quincy, Massachusetts, depressed and worried about the country. His wife, Louisa Catherine Johnson Adams, believed they were returning to Massachusetts to stay. She was an American, but was born in England. Her mother was British. She was, at the time, the first foreign-born First Lady. John and Louisa had four children, but their only daughter had died as a baby. Their sons were grown by the time Quincy Adams retired from the presidency. Soon he became restless. Some neighbors asked if Quincy Adams would consider representing the district as a member of the U.S. Congress. He agreed, but only if voters would let him act as he believed was right, instead of as what would be politically popular. Apparently, they agreed, too, because voters elected Quincy Adams to the House of Representatives 9 times. In Congress, Quincy Adams often fought for citizens' individual liberty. He also strongly opposed slavery. His ideas were not wildly popular at the time, especially among other lawmakers. They had created a rule that said Congress would not even consider any measures against slavery. Yet Quincy Adams defended the rights of enslaved people, frequently and sometimes successfully. He died at the age of 88, a few days after suffering a stroke on the floor of the House of Representatives. At the time, lawmakers were considering a proposal, and, as usual, John Quincy Adams was loudly voting no.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.